Our next speaker is Rowan Tilley from the Seeds of Hope Committee.
Thank you. I think I'll start by explaining my part in the action, and I hope you'll forgive me. I can't remember all the details because it's two or three years ago now, so I haven't talked about Seeds of Hope for quite a while now. But my part in Seeds of Hope East Timor Ploughshares was as a support member. I don't know if all of you are aware of the way that Ploughshares groups work, that usually there's always some people who are prepared to do the hammering, the actual hands-on disarming work, but it's very difficult to do that action in isolation without having people who'll help you to do that, help you do the preparation work, and certainly to support you once you've done it and when you're facing the legal system and probably a prison sentence. So the support part of the group is sort of really essential to the action happening. And just briefly, Seeds of Hope East Timor Ploughshares was the action, I'm sure most of you have heard of it because it's quite a well-known action because of the acquittal, where four women hammered a Hawk warplane in 1996. The warplane was due to be exported to Indonesia, where it was going to be used against the people of East Timor. And four women broke into BAE Wharton and hammered it, completely disarmed it, completely destroyed it, and then went to trial 6 months later and were acquitted, which is why that action is quite well known, because it hit the press in a big way. And it was really exciting for the Ploughshares movement to actually have that first acquittal. So it was a very, very exciting action to be part of. I'm going to sort of talk about this from quite a personal point of view. I got brought into the action somewhat unwillingly. I didn't know very much about the Ploughshares movement, but I was a bit sceptical, really. I couldn't see the sense of handing yourself in to the police, as I understood it, that if you do an action and then wait, you're going to be caught and you're going to be put in prison. And I found that quite difficult to understand. So I was a bit sceptical and a bit sort of reluctant about it. And over the 2 years that I was involved with that action, it just completely changed my thinking, really. It completely turned my ideas about non-violence and direct action upside down and inside out. And by the end of it, I was completely convinced that Ploughshares actions are a really powerful way of disarming. So, I mean, the things that I remember as being very challenging and life-changing for me was being part of the preparation of that action, because it was a women's group. That was another thing that I found quite attractive about it. I like working with women, and that's always been a very positive experience for me. And I think we approached the action then with a very strong sense of equality. And one of the things that was putting me off being involved with Ploughshares is this heroism and the fact that the people who do this disarmament are slightly put on a pedestal by the public, and that then they become inaccessible to people because they're up on this pedestal. But we wanted to try and cut through that, and we wanted to create a strong sense of equality within the group. And so the people that wanted to do the disarming, who'd set up the group, wanted all of the members, including the support group, to be involved as much as possible all the way through the action. So I was involved with the planning of the action and talking about how we would do it and all the decision making. So, you know, I felt very kind of tied in with it, really. And one of the really challenging moments for me was when we discussed who was actually going to do the hammering. And I'd never thought that I was going to be asked if I wanted to hammer. And it was it really shook me that you know, it was the first time that it entered my head that it was possible for me to actually hammer a weapon. And I never considered that as a possibility. I'd never considered the possibility that I could go to prison and that I could kind of live through that experience. So that was the kind of beginning of that process for me. And the other thing that really impressed me about the action was the incredible preparation that we went through. It took 11 months to prepare for that action, of meeting once a month for a whole weekend. And during that time, we built up trust with each other, we got to know each other, we made decisions, we conflicted with each other, and we worked through all the sort of problems together. And it was a really, really good grounding for what was going to be a very intense experience that would put us under incredible pressure. And when you put under huge pressure like that, it's inevitable that conflicts will emerge and it, you know, becomes quite difficult to continue operating as a close group. And that was, although sometimes infuriating, in the end was incredibly enriching experience. And that's basically how affinity groups work. It's, you know, it's about a small group of people working through those kind of problems and learning to overcome their fears. I remember another really exciting moment was when we were discussing how much damage should be done to the plane, and some people think that it should only be symbolic disarmament, but it was really exciting when we decided that actually the plane should be completely written off, you know, and to do as much damage as possible, and that the hole wasn't just the kind of the bit that fires the missiles that was a weapon, but the whole plane should be considered as a weapon and totally written off. So that was really exciting as well. The other thing that I found amazing about this action was that when Lotta and Joe and Andrea and Angie were in prison, we talked a lot about fear and how to overcome fear of prison. And I kind of had this idea that they'd overcome fear in order to do the action. And I remember a letter from Jo when she was in prison saying, well, actually, I never did overcome fear. And actually, when we were doing the action, I was still afraid. I still hadn't really conquered my fear. And it's more of a process of being still feeling the fear, but not allowing the fear to stop them from doing the action. And that was another challenge to me, because it made me think, oh, well, just because I'm frightened of doing this, it doesn't mean to say that I shouldn't do it. You know, I can be afraid and still do something like a plowshares action. So all the time that I was involved with the preparation and all through the time that they're in prison and going through the trial, I was constantly thinking in my mind, could I do this, you know? And that question was becoming more intense all the way through it. I haven't said very much about the trial. When we were planning the preparation for the action, we knew that two people, Stephen and Chris, had actually been through a trial and been found guilty. And we decided to look at their cases and see what possibility there would be of actually winning a court case. So we actually sort of went over the details of their case and tried to look at how we could create a situation where we might win a trial. Wasn't quite as manipulated as that, but we certainly entertained the possibility that it could be legal to do an action like that. And as we were, whilst they were on remand, because as soon as they'd done the action, they were put on remand in prison. And during that time, there was communication between the support group about how the trial would go and what the defence would be. And it became more and more obvious to us that it was possible that we could win this case. And even though I think probably the group was divided, some members of the group were quite pessimistic and felt that we couldn't win a trial and that the best that we could hope for is to actually get the evidence heard. And in a way, that would have been good enough, you know, because then at least people would have heard the issues. But some of us also thought, well, you know, hey, why don't we try for an acquittal? You know, it's possible. Why don't we give it a go? So we were really quite focused on trying to win the legal arguments. But we also didn't want to prevent that from sort of raising the moral issues as well. But I think, yeah, I think that's quite significant that we weren't ruling out that possibility. And I think previously, well, I don't know about this, but I kind of get the impression that most Plowshares actions haven't really believed that it was possible to be acquitted. I don't know whether that's true or not, but we certainly felt it was. And so when the acquittal came, it was amazing. I mean, it was really quite surprising, but not. It kind of underlined a bit of faith, I think, I had that, you know, it is possible to kind of work our way through that legal system and win. So that was really amazing. Since the Plowshares action, I've gone on to be involved with another campaign called Genetic Snowball, which is about genetically modified crops. And the ideas of all the sort of things that I've learned about Plowshares and the methods that Plowshares used, I've been trying to use in the Genetic Snowball campaign. So in a way, that's a kind of continuation. It's one of the fruits, in a way, one of the kind of seeds of hope that germinated from that action. And for me, that's really important, that when people look at seeds of hope, they immediately think about having written off the plane and having achieved this acquittal. But I think it's also important to bear in mind that there were a lot of other victories that in some ways were more important than that. It's very easy to get kind of focused on the kind of the shiny details that look very obvious victories. But I think the deeper victories are the way that it changed people who came into contact with it. Because there's a huge number of people that came to the trial that were on our mailing list. The story of the action went to different countries in the world. And it brought so much hope to all those people. And I think for me, that's the bit of the action that I treasure most. They're the unmeasurable victories, if you like. They're the ones that maybe we don't necessarily see so clearly, but are much more precious in many ways than just having this acquittal and having written off £13 million worth of Hawk Jet. So I'm sort of carrying on with this other campaign, which is another story, really. But I think everybody in Seeds of Hope has continued to be involved with resistance. Angie Zelton, who's coming tomorrow, has been involved with the Trident Plowshares 2000 campaign. Joe's involved with campaigning on East Timor. Andrea's been involved with the struggle in Iraq and breaking sanctions and so on. And everybody's still kind of campaigning. And I think what I'd like to finish on, really, is to ask all of you people, really, that question that I was asked, you know, how far would you be prepared to go? And I'm not necessarily talking about disarming your plane, because I think we all have different levels of risk that we would be prepared to take. And for some people, it might be, I remember the first time I handed out a leaflet, I found that a really scary experience, because then I was becoming part of those people who hand out political leaflets, you know. But, you know, we all have a kind of level of risk that we're prepared to go over. And I'd just like to sort of leave people with that question of you know, how much risk would you be prepared to cope with to stand up for what you believe in. Thank you.